one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies wrap up a three-game series with the Mariners in Seattle, the beginning of a three-city, nine-game West Coast road trip, and they lose two out of three to the Mariners, their first series loss after sweeping three series in a row for the first time since 2010 and ending a nine-game winning streak. The Phillies offense, a little bit quiet the first 2 days out in Seattle, but broke out in a big way on Wednesday on a very satisfying getaway game as the Phillies make their way to Anaheim to take on a decrepit Angels team. So we'll get into all of the different things that went down in Seattle. It was out, you know, these games are on late. You may have missed a lot of this stuff. And if you have, this is the place to be. I'll catch you up on everything that went down here on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll talk about the Phillies figuring out the fastball on Wednesday. Bryce Harper had a big game on Wednesday, continuing a red hot August. Kyle Schwarber, power stroke appears to be back. We'll talk a little bit about Trey Turner and what to do with him and his spot in the batting order. Is it time to move him down? What options does Don Mattingly have, if any, to replace him at the top of the order? And I want to talk a little bit about the starting rotation as well. You had Jesus Luzardo, Aaron Nola, and Zach Wheeler taking the mound this week up in Seattle. Two good, one not so good. And we'll tell you just how worried you should be about Zach Wheeler right now. So lots to get to here on this edition of Hittin' Season. But the series in Seattle obviously didn't go the way the Phillies wanted to. They did not get off to a good start. On Monday night, right out of the chute, Zach Wheeler gives up five runs in the first inning, and the Mariners never looked back. So it was a little bit of a rough start for the Phillies there, as they were actually, you know, the Phillies were up 1-0 after scoring a run in the first inning and then went down 5-1 thanks to a performance from Zach Wheeler that he would like to forget. We're going to talk more about Zach in just a second. Cal Raleigh had himself quite a series, especially in the first two games on Monday and Tuesday. Three home runs in the opener, another home run on Tuesday, four home runs in the first two games. He did strike out four times in the finale. So what a ridiculously weird and depressing season Cal Raleigh has had. Remember, this is a guy who had 60 home runs for the Mariners a year ago, and now he is one of the worst players in baseball this year. Just the largest and most stunning collapse of a single player from year to year that we've ever seen in Major League Baseball history. But the Phillies lose two out of three after their nine-game winning streak was snapped on Monday. Offense, as I said, hard to come by in the first two games. Phillies lost 9-2 on Monday, with Zach Wheeler getting blitzed. They lost 4-1 on Tuesday night, wasting a great Aaron Nola start. But on Wednesday, bounced back with a breezy 6-0 win behind dingers from the Stars and Jesus Luzardo. And I thought it was very interesting on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Cole Weintraub was talking about some of the things that the Phillies adjusted to in this game on Wednesday. As we all know, the Phillies have been a more patient ball club here in the month of August. They have the major league's best on-base percentage. They have the best walk percentage. The offense has been humming along this month as a result. And they've been more patient at the plate. They've been taking more pitches. They've been trying to have pitchers make some mistakes and foul balls off and work counts and do all of those different kinds of things. And it's largely worked in August because the way you pitch against the Phillies historically has been throw stuff out of the strike zone. The Phillies will chase. You don't have to live in the strike zone. Just stay outside the strike zone and the Phillies will get themselves out. Don't know why more teams don't do that regularly anyway. Well, the Seattle Mariners, and I said this on previous podcasts, that at some point, pitchers were going to make an adjustment. They were going to see what the Phillies were doing. They were going to see how the Phillies were approaching their plate appearances differently, how they were approaching with a more patient demeanor approach, and they were going to start to change things up. And we saw the Mariners do that on Monday and Tuesday. The Mariners started using fastballs and throwing them for strikes repeatedly on Monday and Tuesday, and the Phillies were just, they didn't have any answers for it. Cole Weintraub in his story noted that Logan Gilbert used his fastball 49% of the time Monday. He normally only uses it about 40% of the time. George Kirby used his 40% on Tuesday. He normally only uses his fastball 28% of the time, up 12 percentage points. So you had in the first two games of the series, Logan Gilbert ups his fastball percentage by 9%. Kirby ups his by 12%. And then in the game on Wednesday, Brian Wu came in averaging 47%. He threw it 57% of the time on Wednesday. Now, the Phillies in the first two games, they struggled with this. They struggled with this strategy by the Mariners because they were by being passive and taking early strikes, they're putting themselves in holes. So the Phillies adjusted in a big way on Wednesday. They were going right after a Phillies lineup that had built this patient approach, right? This walk-friendly approach. And I always said teams would adjust. Well, the Phillies only took two games until they adjusted. The Phillies needed two games to adjust. And boy, did they ever in the early innings. Now, they scored all six of their runs in the first two innings, but they hit Wu hard in this game. And Wu's a good pitcher. He entered the game on Wednesday as the best American League starter at home. He came in with a 1.96 ERA in 10 starts in Seattle. Over his previous seven home starts, his ERA was 0.79. But right away, you had Bryce Harper in the first inning hitting an opposite field two-run home run. You had Justin Crawford putting together an incredible at-bat, a nine-pitch at-bat, fouling balls off, got a fastball, hit a run-scoring single through the right side to put the Phillies up 3-0 in the second inning, and then with two men on base, Kyle Schwarber comes up and hits home run number 40 on the season to make it a 6-0 game, and Jesus Luzardo did not look back after that. Justin Crawford, by the way, now hitting .329 with runners in scoring position. He's been a little bit of a pain in the rear end to opposing pitchers here as a rookie. I know the ground ball thing has been, you know, something that has not left him. He continues to be a high ground ball hitter, but he's never going to be an impactful offensive player, but he is producing. And when you have a batting average over 300 with runners in scoring position, you're going to stay in the lineup, especially if you're comfortable at the bottom of the lineup. And so that's what Justin Crawford has given this team. He had an important RBI single here on Wednesday, and the Phillies never looked back. But the key was here changing their approach at the plate, understanding what the Mariners' game plan was here. Now, I don't know what other teams are going to do moving forward, if they're going to follow the Mariners game plan, if they're going to go back to the traditional game plan that we normally see from pitchers approaching the Phillies by keeping stuff out of the strike zone. Hopefully the Phillies don't get all messed up and start swinging from their heels every single plate appearance, right? But we do need this team to be flexible, to be able to adapt. Because we knew teams were going to adjust and the Phillies are going to have to adjust back. That's how baseball is. That's how it goes. And so I credit the Phillies. I credit the coaching staff and whoever else it is that was on top of this, that the Mariners were changing their approach on the Phillies. And yeah, it's good to see that the Phillies were able to get a win and dominate a game here on Wednesday after looking pretty flat on Monday and Tuesday. So the Phillies losing 2 out of 3 puts them 4.5 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. The Braves, as the Phillies were losing 2 out of 3, have taken the first two games in their three-game series at home against the Dodgers. And we're looking at this as a potential opportunity for the Phillies to make up a little ground. But the Braves have played the Dodgers really tight. The game here, I don't know if anybody was watching any of the Braves-Dodgers game on Wednesday night, but the Dodgers blew two bases-loaded opportunities in the 7th and 8th inning to blow the game open, and the Braves get a walk-off RBI single. They had nobody on with two outs, but get a double, an intentional walk, and then a single to walk it off against Tanner Scott of the Dodgers. So the Braves have won their first two games of the series against the Dodgers, and lead the Phillies by 4.5 in the National League East. That will move to 5 if the Braves are able to complete the sweep against the Dodgers on Thursday. The Phillies are idle on Thursday as they travel to Anaheim to take on the Angels. It will move to 4 games if the Dodgers are able to salvage the final game of their series against Atlanta. But just kind of keeping an eye on the standings here. And the Cubs ended up losing on Wednesday night. So the Phillies just 2 games behind the Cubs for the top wild card spot again. So that's your kind of playoff positioning right now. The Phillies are still just two games behind the Cubs, 4.5 games behind the Braves in the National League East right now. The Braves playing pretty good baseball against the Los Angeles Dodgers. All right, so let's kind of get into this series a little bit. I want to start off with Bryce Harper. You know, he's the center of attention most of the time, a lot of the time. And right now, for a lot of really great reasons, he is playing as well as he ever has in a Phillies uniform at this moment. He went 2-for-4 on Wednesday, including that 2-run home run in the first inning I just mentioned. He also had a double. His on-base streak is now at 29 straight games. Harper has gotten on base at least once in 29 straight games. That is halfway to the Phillies record of 56 set by Mike Schmidt in 1981 and 82. It's actually a little bit more than halfway. Harper's home run was his 390th career home run. Only 10 more to get to 400. Will he do that this year? I don't know. That's asking a lot, but it is possible. He's got an outside shot at reaching number 400 here in 2026. Bryce Harper in the month of August, check out these numbers. 26 for 77 at the plate. That's a .338 batting average with 5 homers, 12 RBIs, 28 walks, 19 strikeouts, a .514 on base percentage, and a .597 slugging percentage. We are seeing MVP level play from Bryce Harper right now. Yes, folks, before you ask the question, we are seeing elite level play from Bryce Harper here in the month of August. It is just so great to see him having such great at bats, taking his walks, ambushing mistake pitches over the middle of the plate. He's hitting line drives everywhere. When he does make contact, that ball's getting hit hard, and it's usually a line drive someplace. He's elevating some balls and then just taking his walks. He is more than happy to let Luis Urias hit behind him in the lineup. I know lineup construction and having players protect other players usually doesn't mean a whole lot. I think for Bryce Harper, it's helped him relax a little bit, and I think it's helping him to have better plate appearances. The numbers bear it out here in the month of August. During his career high now, 29-game on-base streak, Bryce Harper is 31 for 96. That's a .323 batting average, 6 homers, 16 RBIs, 31 walks, 24 strikeouts, a .488 on-base percentage, and a .594 slugging percentage. Bryce Harper also is showing some improvement defensively in right field, starting to get a little bit reacclimated to being out there. Made a really nice sliding catch in the homestand against the wall out in right field. A little bit of a dangerous play, but he did a fantastic job getting over there. I think he's getting some better reads on the ball, getting some better jumps on the ball. That was certainly the case on Wednesday night in Seattle when early in the game, Julio Rodriguez, the Mariners' outstanding star, slugging, right-handed hitting outfielder, laced a ball the opposite way, hit right to Bryce Harper. Well, not right to him, but in Bryce Harper's vicinity. Harper had to race back to the fence, leaped up and made a leaping grab up against the fence to take extra bases away from Julio Rodriguez. It was a really good play by Bryce Harper. Harper also has an outfield assist since moving back to right field. And honestly, all of the defensive machinations that we saw, I think there were a couple of bumps and bruises along the way with Alec Bohm at first and maybe with Harper a little bit in right field. But overall, the Phillies defense is just as good as it was before Luis Urias got here. They've improved dramatically at third base, where Bryson Stott is playing gold glove caliber defense at third base. I don't know how many of you saw the play that he made on Wednesday where he, diving to his right, backhands a ball, a one-hop laser. Ball was past him. The ball was behind him, and he still somehow, his reaction time was quick enough to get his glove on the ball, and then he stood up and threw a seed to first base. I mean, if you had any questions about Bryson Stott's arm strength from third, I hope you're not still questioning it, because he can make all of the throws over there. And again, like we've talked about on previous podcasts, it gives the Phillies so many more options in terms of what to do this offseason, knowing that you have a third baseman in Bryson Stott, if that's where you want him to play. Alec Bohm has picked it up defensively at first base. He's been okay after a little bit of a rocky start. Luis Arraez made an outstanding play defensively at second base also in this game. And I mentioned Bryce Harper. He's been pretty good out in right field. And certainly his offense is going to make anything he does out in right field just icing on the cake. But the fact that he's been able to move around a little bit, I was certainly concerned about the knee, some of the soreness that he was having there, and whether being out in right field was the best thing for him. But I think I saw that he's been in right field in 10 of the past 11 games. So obviously things he's feeling well enough to get out there and play every day in right field. So Bryce Harper, I don't know if there's time to make an MVP push. It's probably going to be Pete Crow Armstrong, and Shohei Ohtani will be right there. And frankly, the guy we're going to talk about next may have a better argument, Kyle Schwarber, than Bryce Harper. But we've seen Bryce Harper go on late season runs to win the MVP. We saw that was in 2021 when he won his MVP award with the Phillies, how it was really a hot September, August and September that got him there. And unless you're going to have to see a collapse from Pete Crow Armstrong over the final month of the season and for Shohei Ohtani to stop being Shohei Ohtani, I think for somebody else, anybody else to be considered. But I think it's really kind of a fascinating argument. Which of these two Phillies sluggers, Bryce Harper or Kyle Schwarber, has the better argument for MVP right now? And that gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit about Kyle Schwarber and what he's been doing as of late. Schwarber's 3-run home run in the second inning made it 6-0. It was his 40th of the season, as I mentioned, the 380th home run of his career. Schwarber now has hit 40 home runs in back-to-back seasons. He led the majors last year with 56. He's not going to get back to that number, but it is his fourth 40-homer season in the last 5 years, all of them, of course, with the Phillies, and that ties Ryan Howard for the most 40 home run seasons in franchise history. Howard had 4 straight 40 home run seasons from 2006 to 2009. And I know some of us have been keeping track of this stat a little bit more. Schwarber has now hit 227 home runs, 5 seasons with the Phillies. That's the second most for a player in their first 5 years with a franchise. He trails only Babe Ruth, who hit 235 homers in his first 5 seasons with the Yankees. And I don't see any way Schwarber doesn't catch him. He's 8 home runs behind this record that Babe Ruth sent. 8 from tying, 9 from going ahead of this record by Babe Ruth. It really is kind of it's a strange one, but it's a real thing. I mean, it's rare that a player has this kind of slugging success after joining a new team. It really is unusual that he would be able to do this. But he hit 46 home runs in his first season in Philadelphia, 47 in 23, 38 in 24, 56 last year, and now back up to 40. And really, the DH has meant the world to Kyle Schwarber. I think the fact that he's able to not be in the field anymore, I mean, he does play first base once in a while. I don't think we're going to see him in left field anymore at this point. But just Kyle Schwarber being able to be the DH at the time, I think has just, it's made him a more dangerous hitter. I was long advocating the DH for the National League, but can you imagine not being able to witness Kyle Schwarber doing what he's doing on a daily basis? To me, that's a lot better than watching Aaron Nola try to hit. And that was my point when I was ringing that bell and banging that drum kind of all by myself back in the mid 2010s, and everybody else was yelling at me, okay, we need the National League style of ball. Now, I'll take 4 40 home run seasons in 5 years from Kyle Schwarber and a potential MVP finalist type season from Kyle Schwarber. And it hasn't been all sunshine and roses for Kyle Schwarber here in the month of August. He hit the power stroke is starting to come back. Of course, he had the monster walk-off home run on Sunday. But so far here, coming into the game on Wednesday in the month of August, Schwarber was only hitting 198 with a 321 on-base percentage and a 442 slugging percentage. Only a 763 OPS from him. It continues a second-half slide where he has only just a 756 OPS here in the second half. He had a 927 OPS in the first half of the season. And we know that his back was bothering him. a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, maybe actually back a month ago now, when he had to stop taking batting practice outside and would only take batting practice in the cage. He had to kind of change things up in order to give his back a little bit of relief. It seems as though maybe he's coming out of that now, because we are starting to see him hit the ball out of the ballpark a little bit. After hitting, he only hit 3 home runs total in the month of July. He has picked that up a little bit here in August. 3 home runs here already in the month of August. No, pardon me, 6 home runs here in the month of August. So it's just 7 second half home runs for Kyle Schwarber here, but 6 of them have come in the month of August. He's starting to heat up. And we know when Kyle Schwarber heats up, you know, we love the plate discipline. We love the guys singling and doubling and keeping the line moving, but that 3-run home run, that's what you pay Kyle Schwarber for. And so that's what you want from him. So a good sign from him on Wednesday night that the power stroke seems to be continuing. All right, let's talk a little Trey Turner and his ice-cold season. As hot as Bryce Harper is, and as much as it looks like Kyle Schwarber is starting to heat up a little bit, that's how cold Trey Turner is. And outside of a couple of short bursts here and there of productivity, Trey Turner has been ice cold, unproductive, and it's fair to wonder, why is Don Mattingly continuing to put him number 2 in the batting order? In his last 17 games coming into Wednesday, he was hitting 171. And then Trey Turner on Wednesday went 0-for-5 with 2 strikeouts. Check out these numbers. These are not typos. Remember, Trey Turner won the batting title last year. Now, it was just a little over 300 that he hit, but still, he was good last season. But he's been so alternately awful and then good and then awful and then good. Like, there's, when he's bad, he's really bad. And some of the numbers I'm going to read to at the end make me angry, to be perfectly honest with you. His 0.7 FWAR is tied for 123rd best out of 138 qualifying players. His 291 on-base percentage, 291 on-base percentage is 127th out of 138 qualifying players. And his 671 OPS is 131st out of 138 qualifying players. These are the numbers that make me mad right now, I'm going to tell you. Prior to coming to the Phillies, Trey Turner had a career slash line of 302, 355, 487. Since joining the Phillies, 277, 327, 443. And this is not a guy for whom age should be affecting him the way that it has been, or the way that his numbers are looking. So there has never been a point this year where Trey Turner's gotten it all together. For a little while there, the defense was looking better, but he made 2 awful errors in the game on Tuesday night. Just minor league stuff, man. Just awful stuff from him defensively. And obviously the offense is affecting the defense, and the defense is affecting the offense because it's all in his head, I'm sure. But he is an absolute black hole at the top of the lineup. Hitting in front of Bryce Harper, it's just a disaster. And so after the game, Mattingly was asked why he continues to hit Turner at the top of the lineup despite his 291 on-base percentage. And he said, yeah, it's kind of like the same for me. Kind of what we've been doing is where we've had success. We've been consistent. I think we all know that Trey's going to come out of this. And when he does, it'll be hot. You see it with Schwarb. You see it with Harp. Jay. You see it with Arias. He had a few days where he was not so good. You just got to hang in there with guys over the course of a season. And if there's a point where it's like, okay, this has got to go, then you get there. But right now, for me, I don't know why we're going to, it feels like panic. It feels like to guys, it's panic when you start making changes like that late in the year. First of all, let me point out a couple of things. Just from a theoretical standpoint, it's not panic to remove a 291 on base percentage player as you're in late August. Okay, this is not early sample size noise. Trey Turner is going to have a season where he is among the worst hitters in baseball, no matter what happens from here on out. That's the season that he's had. He's been one of the very worst players for almost 5 months now. It's not panic if you waited 5 months. So that whole thing, and you know, wait for, he's gonna come out of this. We've been waiting 5 months. Maybe he will, but you're planning on it? Like it's something that's definitely gonna happen when he comes out of this. When he emerges from this 5 month funk here in the final month when the pressure is on the most, then you're gonna love the fact that I have him hitting number two. Well, here's a thing to think about. You move him down in the lineup and he gets hot, then you can move him back up. This stuff's not written in cement. It's pencil. You erase it and move him back up if he gets hot. So the theorizing here by Don Mattingly is one that I disagree with vehemently. You know, it's not panic if you make a change right now. Now, here's the problem. And I think this is more to Don Mattingly's point why there's probably not a whole lot that they can do. You could put Bryson Stott in the two hole. But then what you're doing is you've got four straight left-handers at the top of the lineup. And you would have managers racing to get their left-handed relievers into these games as quickly as possible, especially in the playoffs, where you would have Schwarber, Stott, Harper, Arias in some order there in the top four. I just don't think you can do that. You can't have four lefties lined up all together. You've got to break it up a little bit. Now, I know Turner, as a right-handed hitter, has not hit lefties well this year. He hasn't hit anybody left well this year. Lefty, righty, whatever it is. But if he does get hot, then you can imagine that he will start to hit lefties. But I don't think you can put Bryson Stott in the two hole. I don't think you can put Arias in the two hole either. Harper is so comfortable with Arias hitting behind him. I think you got to keep those guys lined up the way they are. So if you don't want to have four straight left-handed hitters at the top of the lineup, which I think is wise, then what is your alternatives? What are your alternatives? Well, if it has to be a right-handed hitter right now, Alec Bohm is probably your best option in the two hole. I think right now in a big spot, I would rather have Alec Bohm at the plate than Trey Turner. Now, what Trey Turner does give you at the top of the order when he does get on is speed, and that's helpful. Now, when Kyle Schwarber is on base in front of him, it's a little less helpful because he can't run past Kyle Schwarber. But Turner does give you the speed aspect at the top of the lineup that Alec Bohm absolutely would not. You'd have Schwarber and Bohm, two of the slowest runners in baseball, at the top of the lineup there. But this is not a stealing team anyway. This is not a team that's stealing bags. They're not going first to third a ton. And those guys would never do that anyway. So I suppose the best answer is putting Alec Bohm in the two hole. Is that a better option than Trey Turner right now? Would it help Trey Turner to move down in the lineup? Maybe get some of the pressure off him. Would it help him to bench him for a couple of games? And put Edmundo Sosa there. Maybe that's what you do. Maybe you put Edmundo Sosa at shortstop for a couple of games and have him hit number two. It's either going to be Alec Bohm, or, I mean, it's not going to be it's not going to be JT Realmuto. Realmuto's numbers are just as bad, if not worse, than Trey Turner's. So who else do you have hitting from the right side of the plate? Do you put Brian De La Cruz there on days when he starts? Okay, I could be talked into that. It's not the greatest plan in the world, but I could be talked into that. I wouldn't put Derek Hill there. And even Brian De La Cruz would be an iffy proposition. So again, if it's got to be a right-handed hitter, is Don Mattingly right to keep Trey Turner where he is? He might be. I don't like it any more than you do, but I don't know that Don Mattingly has another alternative. All the alternatives are not great. There's just a shortage of good right-handed hitting hitters on this team. I'd love what Brian De La Cruz has given them in the outfield, but I don't think you want him coming up to the plate more often than Trey Turner does. I don't think that's where Don Mattingly would be going here. So at the end of the day, Trey Turner probably stays in the number two spot, and you just cross your fingers and hope that the guy can figure it out, and that he gives you at least this one last month of good play. of good hitting. You know, you just got to work around him because there's just not a whole lot else that you can do if you're a Phillies fan right now. I'm not putting Stott up there. I'm not putting four lefties in a row. It's just, that's a recipe, especially in the playoffs. That is a recipe for disaster. You're just not going to do that. All right. We're going to finish off talking about the starting rotation. An interesting turn through the rotation here for Luzardo, Arenola, and Zach Wheeler. We'll start off with Luzardo, who pitched on Wednesday night. Just an absolute gem of a game from him. Seven innings. One hit allowed by Jesus Luzardo in seven innings of work. No earned runs, obviously. Three walks, nine strikeouts on 104 pitches. He was absolutely electric once again. He is their best pitcher right now. He is their ace right now. Now, Christopher Sanchez will probably take over that spot at some point again here during this home stretch. But Jesus Luzardo has become a strikeout machine. 200 strikeouts for the second straight season and the third time in his career. He did it once with the Marlins as well. He entered the game Wednesday with a 1.95 road ERA. Jesus Luzardo loves pitching on the road this year. And after seven scoreless innings, that ERA is now down to 1.80 on the road. That is the fourth best road ERA by any pitcher in Major League Baseball. And so where this takes you with Luzardo, again, looking ahead to the playoffs, is if the Phillies are in the wild card round and, you know, they're playing all their games on the road, if they're wild card two or wild card three, which is the position they hold right now, it doesn't matter what game you start Luzardo. You're probably starting Christopher Sanchez one. I'll talk about the other pitchers in just a second, but Luzardo could be in the conversation for a game one start, depending on how these last 5 weeks of the season go, how this last 20% of the season goes. He's pitching that well. He's pitching that good. Jesus Luzardo is pitching like the kind of guy you would want on the mound in game one of a playoff series. And he has pitched game one of a playoff series against the Phillies, you'll remember, back in 2023 in the wild card round when the Phillies got to him a little bit. They didn't beat him around or anything like that, but they did beat him in game one of that NLDS. And we saw him the way he shoved last year against the Dodgers in a losing effort. He was just tremendous. And that's the way he's pitching right now. Everything is working for him. Fastball's working. The slider's working. Everything working for Jesus Luzardo right now. Thank goodness. And if you're going to start him in a playoff game and you have game one at home, I'm probably starting him in game three. I'm probably letting him start on the road because he just does seem really comfortable doing that. And then you'd have him in a game six or a game seven if it came to that. But we're kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit there. Arenola had another really encouraging start on Tuesday night. It was in a losing effort, but in six innings, he gave up only three hits, allowed two runs, one of them on a Cal Raleigh home run, three walks, seven strikeouts on 92 pitches. And he had some really nasty two-seam fastball action on the inner part of the plate. Once again, vintage Arenola here. You talk about a guy coming in and figuring some things out at just the right time. Arenola has picked the exact right time to figure things out. Again, it's like he and Zach Wheeler are having a Freaky Friday moment. They've switched bodies. Nola has a 2.60 ERA over his last six starts. He went 5 2/3 innings and gave up one earned run on July 28th. On August 3rd, went six innings and gave up three runs. On August 8th, it was five innings and two runs. August 13th, five innings, one run. On the 19th, seven innings, one run. And now here on Wednesday, six innings and two runs. We're starting to see Arenola being pushed a little bit, pitching a little bit deeper into games. I am glad that they got him out with a 6-0 lead and the Mariners not able to generate much of anything. Didn't require the Phillies to dip into their bullpen too much, and they needed to get Joan Duran a little bit of work here in this game on Wednesday. But Arenola, right now, if he's a game four starter for you, I feel better about that. I feel pretty good about that. I like Arenola starting game four of a playoff series if he's pitching like this. Obviously, you're always worried about Arenola, but we haven't seen the big blow-up innings from Arenola as of late. He's still giving up home runs. He's always given up home runs. He's always going to give up home runs, but they've been solo home runs. The walks have disappeared. He was walking a ton of guys. His command was terrible last year and for the first half of this year. And now the command is back. He's commanding the baseball better. He's not walking guys. So that reduces the number of two and three run home runs you give up. So the solo home runs, you can live with one or two of those over the course of six or seven innings if that's all you're giving up. And right now for Aaron Nola, that's all he's giving up right now. The last guy we need to talk about, though, is Zach Wheeler. And if I didn't know any better, I'd say he's hurt. But he says he's not. Zach Wheeler insists he's not hurt. The stuff still does appear to be there. The velo is pretty close to where it should be. Just a little, maybe a little tick off. I think it's fair to wonder if the Phillies need to skip a Wheeler start. Skip a turn in the rotation. Give the guy a little bit of a break. On Friday night, it was just a disaster. He couldn't throw. He couldn't command anything. All of his misses were well outside the strike zone. And then when he did come over the plate, it was right down the middle. So you had a terrible combination here with Zach Wheeler. None of his misses outside of the strike zone were competitive. All of the balls that he threw, it was very easy for a hitter to diagnose the pitch as a ball very early in the process. Easier than it ordinarily would be against Zach Wheeler. He was missing by a lot. He wasn't missing by inches. He was missing by a foot in a lot of different cases. So he was just, he was all over the place. He couldn't throw any of his breaking balls for strikes. Just couldn't even get him over the plate. And then when he did get stuff over the plate, when he did come over the plate with a fastball, or when he did have a slider or a cutter or whatever it was, come over the plate, it would be right down the middle. And hitters were teeing off on him. Like, I have never seen hitters tee off on Zach Wheeler. He allowed 5 runs in the first inning, only went 4 innings, gave up 8 runs on 9 hits, 5 walks, 103 pitches. They brought him back out for the 5th inning, even though his pitch count was in the 90s, which kind of defied logic. I'm not sure what Don Mattingly was doing there. And Zach Wheeler comes out in the 5th inning and gives up back-to-back jacks. And then they went and got him. But he was trying to get like 2 more batters out of him, it seemed like. Just to kind of stretch him out and help the bullpen a little bit. Just dumb. He didn't have it. Just get him. And Zach Wheeler is the first pitcher. This is not a record that Zach Wheeler wants to hold, okay? Zach Wheeler is the first pitcher in Phillies history to allow 4 or more homers and 5 or more walks in a single outing. That's incredible. That is an amazing statistic. The first pitcher in Phillies history, Zach Wheeler, to allow 4 or more homers in a game and 5 or more walks in the same game. In his last 5 full starts, excluding the rain-shortened game against the Orioles, he has a 9.27 ERA. And the number that jumps out at you the most here is 16 walks in 22 and a third innings. He's usually a guy who is among the league leaders in walks per nine. But he's had 3 games in his last 4 in which he's walked 4 or more batters. And in 2 of those games, he walked 5 batters in each game. If I didn't know any better, I'd say he was hurt. But he says he's not. He thinks it's mechanical. And if he's right, if this is something that's just mechanical, if he's not hurt, then I'm not as worried about it. Because I do think Zach Wheeler and Caleb Cotham and JT Realmuto we'll figure it out. My big concern about Zach Wheeler would have been if the velocity all of a sudden is now he's living 92, 93. That's a problem. But he's still 95, 96 with the occasional 97 thrown around here. So as long as the velocity is still good on the fastball, I feel like, and he's been talking about some of the mechanical things that have been going on that he's been kind of dealing with. He wasn't pushing off enough with his legs, and that was taking away some of the fastball velocity. So he started doing that more, and he's seen an uptick in his velocity, which is what he wanted, but it's also, he thinks, affecting his breaking pitches. So they've got to figure that out. They've got to work that out. If you look at this Phillies rotation as a whole since July 1st, here's what you got. Jesus Luzardo in 9 starts since July 1st. A 2.45 ERA. Aaron Nola in 9 starts, a 3.57 ERA. Andrew Painter in 5 starts, a 3.62 ERA. Christopher Sanchez in 9 starts, a 4.03 ERA. Now, to be fair to Sanchez, he had 1 really bad start. He had a 9 earned run outing that has inflated that number quite a bit. And in 10 starts, Zach Wheeler has a 5.51 ERA going back to July 1st. So the rotation is doing okay in a lot of cases. Right now, they're kind of being saved by the part of the rotation that they couldn't buy a win with for the first 4 months of the season. They couldn't win it. They couldn't win a game with the number 4 and 5 starter on the mound. And now Aaron Nola and Andrew Painter have the second best and third best ERA in the rotation going back to July 1st. Baseball's a funny game. Just a weird, weird game. So looking ahead to this week's series, this weekend's series against the Angels out in Anaheim, Friday night's game is a 9:38 Eastern time first pitch. You've got Andrew Painter looking to continue the good times. Fascinating. I mean, every outing from him is going to be just fascinating for the rest of the year to kind of see if he's going to build on things that we've seen over these last couple of starts. Will he build off of the best start of his big league career when he went 7 innings and gave up just 1 run against the Cardinals last weekend? Will he build on that or does he take a step back? Fascinating game on Friday night against the Angels. He'll go up against a very good left-handed starter that this is a guy. We'll see exactly how real the Phillies' changes are, because they're going to go up against Reed Detmers, who's a very good left-handed starter for the Angels. This is the kind of guy that would give the Phillies all kinds of trouble historically over these last few years. Maybe the changes offensively will help. We'll see if Reed Detmers will see what his plan of attack is against the Phillies. Does he do what the Mariners were doing with a lot of fastballs against this group? I don't know, but we'll see. It'll be a fascinating start from Andrew Painter, and it'll be really interesting to see how the Phillies handle a good left-handed starting pitcher with their lineup. The game on Saturday will be a 10:07 Eastern time start time. Goodness gracious, how many of you guys are going to be up for that one? Christopher Sanchez will be taking the mound against Ryan Johnson. He of the 5.75 ERA, a right-hander, that is a guy the Phillies should mash. That should be a must-win game against the Angels. And then on Sunday, it's a 4:07 start time. Zach Wheeler will get another chance, and he'll go up against Japanese phenom Yusei Kikuchi, who is not very phenomenal this year. 8 starts for the Angels, a 6.25 ERA, but he is a lefty, another left-hander, and we all know with the Phillies how they have trouble against left-handers. We'll see how they do against Reed Detmers and Kikuchi on Friday and Sunday. But this series against the Angels this weekend, there's no reason for the Phillies not to sweep this series. No reason for them to not sweep this series. The Angels are 30 games under 500, 52-82. The Phillies at 74-60 absolutely should go into Los Angeles and sweep the Angels. There's just no way around it. I mean, it's a terrible team. They are a terrible team. If they lose 2 out of 3 against the Angels, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to come on here on the Roundtable edition of the podcast early next week, and I'm going to have things to say, because you can't lose 2 out of 3 to this Angels team. You win 2 out of 3, okay. It's a series on the road. It's on the West Coast. I'll take it. But you really should sweep this series. The Angels are 30 games under 500. That's a bad baseball team, folks. And then the Phillies will go to Arizona to take on a Diamondbacks team right in the thick of the wild card race. That series will have all kinds of wild card repercussions. So this should be an easier, more fun weekend of Phillies baseball against the Angels before you get some real exciting games against the Diamondbacks out in Arizona to finish off this 3-city, 9-game West Coast road trip. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to thank you all for listening and checking us out. Please tell your friends, family members, and total and complete strangers that you meet on the street about the Hittin' Season podcast. Anybody you see them wearing a Phillies hat, a Phillies shirt, Phillies gear, run up to them with your phone and show them the Hittin' Season podcast and make sure they put it on their phones that they're listening as well. You're doing them it may seem like you're annoying them, but you're actually doing them a favor. You're doing them a public service. So thank you all for doing that. And please, if you haven't left a 5-star rating or a review over at Apple Podcasts to let me know what you think about the show, please go ahead and do that. It does help other Phillies fans find the show. Plus, I would just love to hear what you guys think about the show, the direction, everything else we got going on here. It's a lot of fun to hear from you guys and to get the feedback. So again, it's Apple Podcasts. We're also on Spotify. Wherever it is you get your podcast, that's where you can find us. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.